So this week is Parshas Miketz. You know that Joseph comes out of prison, and within a short time, you know, he's in charge of the whole country of Egypt. And there's a famine in the land, and there's no food in the land of Canaan. Jacob says to his children, you better go down to Egypt and buy some food. So they come to Egypt, and the Torah tells us in Genesis chapter 42, Yosef sees his brothers and he recognizes them and speaks harshly to them. Asks them, where are you coming from? They say, we've come from Canaan to buy food. And he recognizes them and they don't recognize him. Torah tells us he remembers the dreams that he dreamed, and he says to them, you're spies. You've come to see the vulnerability of the land. And they said, no, we're just customers. We're all children of one man. We're brothers. We're not spies. Nah, he says, you're spies. You've come to spy out the land because you're Canaanites. You want to come and attack. And they said, no, we're 12 brothers, and we're all sons of one man in the land of Canaan. The youngest one isn't with us. One of the brothers, one of us is disappeared. So Yosef taunts him. He says, nah, that's what I said. Yeah, you're a bunch of spies. You know what? I'll test you. Let's see if you can bring this fictitious younger brother here. Send one of you and bring your other brother. And then you all stay here in prison. We'll find out whether you're speaking the truth. And he swears by Pharaoh's life, you're a bunch of spies. And he locks them up in prison for 3 days. On the third day, the Torah tells us, "Vayom aleim Yosef b'yom hashlishi." And Joseph says to them on the third day, "Zois asu v'chiyu." This do and live. Esu elokim ani yorei. I fear God. If you're true, if what you say is true, that you're really brothers, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to lock one of you up. And the rest of you can go and bring food to your families. But I'm going to keep one of you hostage here, and you're going to bring your younger brother, and we'll see whether you're speaking the truth or not. And they did so. Then the Torah tells us, "Vayomru ish el achiv," and one of them said to the other, "Aval Hashem im anachnu al achinu." You know, it's our fault. We are to blame because of our brother. Asher ra'inu tzaras nafshoi, we saw the pain of his soul. His chalino eleinu, when he was begging us to let him go. Lo shumanu, and we didn't listen to him. Al kein bo eleinu hatzarazos, and that's why all this trouble is happening to us. And Reuven adds, Reuven says to them, "Vayan Reuven oisam," and he answers them, saying, "Halo yamarti aleichem, I told you, leimoy al techtu bayele, don't sin with the child, don't do any money, v'lo shamatim, and you didn't listen. V'gam domoy hinei nidrash, and now his blood is being sought." You know, there's the karma is happening. So there's a few questions. You know, the most obvious in the narrative is, you know, why Reuven would taunt his brothers. You know, they're all sorry, they're feeling guilty and terrible, they've done a bad thing, and he says, "Oh, I told you so." I mean, where do we find such a brotherly thing? You know, is that really what he's saying? "I told you so." I mean, surely that's not what he's saying. So been thinking about this, and you know, sometimes I feel I want to say some about Torah. I want to say something, but I feel like it's too much of a chiddush. It's too new. It's too radical. I don't know, but it's like I haven't seen it written somewhere. And you know, surely every good thing is already written. So Gemara says, every new chiddush in the Torah that some sweet student was going to say in the future, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses already heard it on Sinai. So I don't know if this is what Moshe said on Sinai. Halavai, if anybody finds a source for this, I want to hear it. There's something that happens here. Joseph says on the third day, this I want you to do and you'll live. Zois asu v'chiu. Esu elekim ani yorei. I fear God. So immediately, you know, they go into this paroxysm of guilt and shame and confession and blaming themselves and say, well, what happened? What is there that Yosef said? Originally, when he accused them of being spies, he said, you know what? I'm going to send one of you back to Canaan to bring your younger brother, and we'll see whether he's speaking the truth. Now, after he says, I fear God, he says, you know what, I'm going to keep one of your brothers hostage, and the rest of you can go. Why? Because one man is not going to be able to carry enough food for a big family. If they really are 12 brothers, one's missing, but there's 11 of them living with their father, and they're all married and they have children and grandchildren and they have cattle and sheep and stuff like that, one person with a donkey cannot carry enough food to feed them in the famine. So Yosef has changed his mind after 3 days of thinking about it, and he says to them, you know, originally my plan was to send one of you, but now I'm going to keep one of you hostage and I'm going to send the other 9. So what is it that's changed his mind? And I want to say that what's changed his mind is this Es Ho'elekim Ani Yorei, I fear God. And what does it mean, I fear God? It means that I fear the din, I fear the judgment that I am about to pass on you. You know, Elikim, you know, has different meanings. One of the meanings is God. Elohim means a judge. And Elohim Acherim means pagan gods. You know, so there are different meanings to this word. Unlike the name of God Yudke Vovke, the name of God Elohim is shared not just with other gods, so to speak, but with human beings who act like God. And to be a judge and to pass a sentence is to be in the place of God. And Yosef says, while my job here as Mishneh LeMelech, you know, I'm second to the king, and the king has put me in charge of the welfare of Egypt, and it's my job to take care of this country, and that's why I'm looking out to make sure that there are no spies here who are coming to check out the vulnerabilities of Egypt so that they can go back to Canaan and whatever nefarious business they're on. My job is to ferret it out, and really, if I do my job, only one of you should be allowed out of here and blow the consequences. You know, just doing my job. But he says, Eso lekim ani yorei. There's something else I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of Elohim. I'm afraid of that din. I'm afraid of the judgment. And there's something inside me that says, let them go and feed their families and take care, because they may not be spies. And don't be rigid, and don't be implacable, and don't be saying, this is the law, it's out of my hands. Like so many apparatchiks, so many bureaucrats, so many people in everyday life, we absolve ourselves of the responsibilities of the decisions we make by saying, it's out of my hands. This is the law. I have to do this. I'm just doing my job. I'm sorry. And Yosef says to them, Esolikim ani yore, and therefore I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say I'm sorry. What can I do? My hands are tied. I'm just doing my job. I'm going to let you all go, except for one that I'll keep behind. You all will be able to take enough food to feed your families. Now bring me your other brother, the younger one. You know, when Yosef says this, Esolikim ani yore, he is saying something new about Yiras Elokim, fear of God. Doesn't mean I'm afraid of God. When we talk about fear of God, then we call that Yiras Shamayim, fear of heaven. Yosef is saying, I'm afraid of acting like God. I'm afraid of being God. I'm afraid of taking those decisions and enforcing those rules as though I were a God. I'm afraid of that part of me that is like that. I don't want that. I'm afraid of it. It turns me into somebody I don't want to be, being that judge and being that, you know, the one who has to carry out the sentence and so forth. I don't want that. I don't want it on my conscience. I can't be that. There's something inside me that says, no. You know, when he told that to his brothers, they broke down completely because they remembered what they had done. And, you know, it undid their whole world. And as soon as he said those words, something inside them opened up and they said, how could we have done what we did? Now, somebody once asked the Holy Sanzerov, he said, I understand the Torah says that somebody can't testify on behalf of his brother, his sister, his father, his mother, his child, that a korov, somebody's family close, is postulated, is disqualified from testifying on behalf of family. So he said, Rabbi, I can understand the Torah prohibits or disqualifies the testimony of somebody who wants to help his family. Right? You say, it's his family, he's biased. But why does the Torah disqualify somebody who testifies against his family? If a brother testifies against a brother, why does the Torah say, I don't believe him? If he's testifying for him, you ought to say, all right, he's trying to, looking out for his brother. But if he's testifying against him, he's not looking out for him, why shouldn't he be believed? And the Sanzerov said, what kind of a person testifies against his brother? It's not a mensch. It's no honor. What kind of a person will allow himself to be put into that position that he would stand up in court and say, my brother's guilty? So that kind of person, you can't trust him anyway. So you can't trust him if he testifies for his brother because he's biased for his brother. And if he testifies against his brother, what kind of mensch is this? You know, we were saying last week that Yosef, when they threw him into the pit, he went green, yellow. I mean, he looked, but when they pulled him out, he was worth 20 pieces of silver. That's all he was worth. Even though, you know, by the time he gets to Egypt, you know, his Yifei Toyev, Yifei Mar, is this beautiful man. It would be worth a fortune, right, as a slave. How come they only got 20? Because he looked mamish like he was dying. And it was that which convinced Yehuda. On the one hand, we know that all those snakes and scorpions that were in there, they didn't attack him. So, he must be like, Daniel in the lion's den, or, he must have there's something godly about him, something divine on his face, that those predators stayed away from him. Okay, but if he looks so sick and green and terrified and stuff like that, he has some karma to work through, so we'll sell him. We'll sell him down to Egypt as a slave and so forth. So how come, they said to themselves, how come if we agreed with Judah not to kill him, how come we didn't then listen to the voice inside us that said, he's Yosef, he's your brother, what are you doing? And that's, when Yosef talks about fearing God and fearing that part of the self which can be judgmental and discompassionate and objective and so forth, when he says, I'm afraid of that in myself, and I'm going to ignore that voice, and I'm going to let you go, they suddenly realized that they hadn't done that, and that's when they fell apart, And Reuven said, I was the first one who said, let's not kill him. And how come, after I said, let's not kill him, I myself wasn't touched with the compassion that this man, this Egyptian here, has just shown us? So he wasn't taunting them, saying, I told you so. He was blaming himself and saying, even before you decided to listen to Judah, I had already said to you, let's not kill him. So how come I was so dead and numb inside? If this is the case, then when we talk about fear of God, we mean something else than what we usually think, So that's, I feel like, such a chiddush. Unless somebody can show me somewhere else where the definition of fear of God, see, fear of heaven is fear of the shout. Why do we call it Yiras Shemayim? I think it's the Chiddush HaRim, Sfas Emes said, the heavens, they stand there because God shouted at them and said, be there. And so, they don't expand and they don't contract. They're there because they can still feel that shout that God shouted at them. And that's their existence is a response to that shout and that vibration of God's voice. And so, when we talk about Yiras Shamayim, fear of heaven, we're talking about getting in touch with that shout and feeling it inside us. And I want to say that there's a distinction between that Yiras Shamayim, the fear of heaven, which we experience as terror of whatever, of the word, of a terror, of fright, fear of God, and Yiras Elokim, fear of God, which is of something that's going on inside. We're afraid of the process inside us. There's a Beis Yaakov, the son of the Ishbitzer. He has a Torah this week, one of the scariest Torahs I ever read. And I want to read it to you. He says, Yosef was they were afraid that Yosef was trying to split them. Their father, Jacob has two names, Jacob and Israel, right? Yaakov and Israel. God also has two names, Yud Kei Vav Kei and Elikim. Sometimes God is referred to by the four-letter name, and sometimes Elikim, and sometimes Yaakov is Yaakov, and sometimes he's Yisroel. Yaakov, in the way of thinking, in the Kabbalah, he represents God on earth. And the Gemara says that the face of Yaakov is carved into the throne of glory. So they saw the brothers, they saw Joseph as trying to split them off from their father by bringing this bad report, which is the same as, splitting God and the Shekhinah. In the Zohar, the Shekhinah is not called the Shekhinah, it's called Knesset Yisrael, the congregation of Israel. They are the congregation of Israel. Joseph is trying to split them by bringing a bad report. They think that Joseph is the byproduct of Jacob, the way that Ishmael is the byproduct of Abraham and Esau is a byproduct of Isaac. So Joseph is a byproduct of Jacob. And since he's trying to split them from their father and their father from them, he's really cutting off heaven and earth, God from the world. And as such, he needs to be stopped. And the way they were going to stop him is by killing him. So the Bais Yaakov says, "Va'achah emes." He says, and after it's all over, "Im loyhoyu moitzim loyshum zechus." If they wouldn't have been able to find any kind of merit in Joseph, "Vohoyu harigim moitzim," and they would have killed him, "Azhoya kodesh baruch hu maskim imoyim," God would have agreed with them. "Liyoysam aklal Yisrael," that they, the 11 remaining brothers, would be the children of Israel. They would be the Jewish people. And he says, and they would have been like the Sanhedrin that sentences somebody to death. That once the judges sentence somebody to death, the judge can only see what his eyes can see. And if a judge, seeing what he sees, decides that somebody is guilty and then carries out a sentence and stuff, the Gemara says that if judges judge honestly and decently and properly, then God is there in that convocation of justice. And even if it means they sentence somebody to death, God is maskim, God agrees and puts his imprimatur on it and says, I agree. And the Bais Yaakov is saying that had they carried out that sentence, God would have agreed and the narrative would have healed itself and Joseph would have been who they said he was. And it would have been, after the fact, God would have, unraveled the narrative and turned Joseph into whoever, right? I mean, the whole thing about the Bnei Yaakov is that God is standing over him even in his sleep, meaning that even when we do things without thinking it through properly, God promises, "I'll fix it for you." That's the meaning of Joseph's dream, that he's dreaming and God is standing over him even when he's unconscious. And God is protecting him from making mistakes. Okay, so there would have, so this Ishbit Satoira is mind-blowing. He's saying, had they carried through and in all earnestness said, Yosef, you're the dark side and we're going to get rid of you and so forth and sentence him to death, and it would have been finished and done. All right, it would have been finished and done. However, because Yehuda looks at him and he sees a holy spark in him, now the question arises, if you could see a holy spark in him, so you weren't going to kill him now. How come you weren't afraid of judging him? How come you weren't afraid of the judge inside yourself? How come there was no Yiras Elikim? And that was the question that suddenly occurred to them when Yosef said to them, "You can all go except for one of you." And I was thinking about the Akedah. There we find fear of God. It says, Vayishlach Avram es yodoi, Avram sends his hand. Vayikach es amacheles, and he takes the knife, lishchoytes benoi, to slaughter his son. Vayikrael of Malach Hashem in Hashemayim, and an angel of God calls to him from heaven and says, Avraham, Avraham. And he says, Hineni, here I am. And the angel says, Al tishlach yodcha lana, don't strike the child, don't touch the child. Val tas lemuma, don't do anything to him. Ki ato yodati, because now I know, ki yirei lekimato, that you fear God. What is this, now I know, that you fear God? So I was thinking, the story is, Vayishlach Avraham es yodoi, Avraham stretches out his hand, Vayikach es amacheles, and he takes the knife. Why does the Torah need to tell this, Vayishlach Avraham es yodoi, that Avraham sends his hand? And the Medrash says, because his hand didn't want to do. I mean, could you just say that Avraham took the knife? Vayikach es amacheles, was Vayishlach Avraham es yodoi? Because his hand refused. He was obedient to God, and he was going to do what God said, and his body refused. His hand refused. And Avraham sent his hand. Vayishlach Avraham es yodi. He sends his hand to pick up the knife, and it refuses. Then God says to him, now I know that you've got Yiras Elokim. Now I know you've got fear of God. Meaning that there's something inside you that will ignore me, my command. There's something inside you that has Yiras Elokim, that has fear of the judge who can carry out this sentence. And you're afraid of it. Now I know. And so in fact, the success of the Akedah is that Avraham's hand refuses to follow the command. The Torah tells us at the end of Deuteronomy, Pashas Kiseitse, Zochor es Ashos Elcha Amalek, remember what Amalek did to you Baderech, on the road, Batzeischem in Mitzrayim, when you left Egypt. Ashekorcha Baderech, he happened to you on the way, Vayizanev Becha, and he tailed you, Ukala Nechsholim Acharecha, all those who were lagging behind, Va'ata Oyev V'yogeh, and you were tired and worn out, Velo Yorei Elokim, and he did not fear God. So the Torah says, V'hoye Baniach Hashem Nekecha, when God gives you rest from all your enemies from around in the land that God, your God, has promised you to give you as an inheritance, Timchazech Amalek, blot out the memory of Amalek. So the Medrash, there, the Medrash Tanchuma says, V'lo yorei Elokim, and he did not fear God. Amalek did not fear God. Reb Pinchas says, in the name of Shmuel ben Nachman, Mesoiris Agoda Hibiyahi. We have a tradition, an agodic tradition that is handed down from Moshe at Sinai, Biyad Bneho Sherochel Esav Noifel, that Esau is only going to fall into the hands of the children of Rochel, meaning Yosef. So Amalek is the, Joseph is the nemesis of Amalek. So as soon as Joseph is born, Jacob says, all right, we can go back to the land of Canaan now. And that's when he started to make his way back to Canaan, because Joseph is the nemesis. The nemesis means the one who is as strong as, the one who knows all the strengths and weaknesses of. The nemesis is the one you can't beat because he's got your own strengths. And the Medrash says that that's why Moshe says to Joshua, go and choose, pick out some men and go make war with Amalek when they came out of Egypt, because he's from the tribe of Ephraim, which is from the tribe of Joseph. And Joseph is the one who said, Eselekim ani yorei, I fear God. And Esav is the one about whom it says, V'lo yorei elekim, and he doesn't fear God. And then the Medrash goes on to say, here you've got Esau, who grew up between two righteous men. He grew up between Abraham and Isaac, and he didn't learn anything from them. And here you've got Joseph, who grew up between two evil men, Potiphar and Pharaoh, and he doesn't learn from them. Here you've got a one who became a firstborn because of his good deeds, and there you've got one who lost his firstborn because of his bad deeds. Here you've got one who was always careful not to spill blood or to commit adultery, and there you've got Esau, who can't wait to spill blood and commit adultery. There you've got one who believes in the resurrection of the dead, as Joseph said, and God is going to surely remember you. And there you've got Esau, who doesn't believe in the resurrection, as he says, I'm about to die. This one gives his life to protect his mother's honor. Joseph stood in front of his mother Rachel so that Esau shouldn't look at her. And Esau couldn't wait to rip his mother to bits, as it says that on his way out when he was born, he tore her uterus out. So Yosef and Esav are the opposites of each other. And this is truly what we see, you know, in Amalek, that he has no compassion, that it doesn't matter how much you can appeal. You know, I heard a story that when they were setting up the final solution of getting rid of the Jews, Himmler, Goering, or one of these henchmen of Hitler, he had a meeting with all the top Nazis and Germans, and he said, look, we all know a good Jew. We all have a house Jew, or somebody, a physician, academician, musician, artist, somebody we know who's good. And you're all thinking about the Führerbefehl, the order that's come from the Führer to kill all the Jews. Listen, you have to overcome this feeling of compassion that you have for this Jew that you happen to know. You have to suppress it in order to fulfill the Führerbefehl, which is to get rid of all the Jews. To just think over the big picture, we're doing this for the future of the German people, the Reich, the world. We're going to save the world. Just push it down. You see, that's Amalek, right? That's the meaning of the Lo Yorei Elokim, is not afraid of that God act in himself. Yosef is afraid of the God act in himself, and as a result of telling his brothers that, they are overcome with this need to do teshuva. So when they come home to their father, and they tell him what happened, he says, I'm not sending Benjamin down there. So Reuven, the oldest, Vayomer Reuven el Aviv Lemor, he says, may my two sons die if I don't bring him back to you. Give him into my hand, and I promise I'll bring him back. And he says, Lo Yered Bni Mochem. Forget it. I'm not sending Benjamin with you. His brother died, and he's the only one that I've got left. If something bad happens to him, I die. So he doesn't even bother arguing with them. Then the Torah tells us there was a very heavy famine in the land, and when they'd finished that food that they'd brought with them from Egypt, their father says to them, "Nu, go buy some more." And so Vayoyma Elov Yehuda Lemer. So Yehuda says to him, the man told us, don't come down here again without your brother. If your father will let your brother come down here, so he says, if you will let us take our brother down, we'll go. If you don't, we're not going. Because the man told us, don't see my face without your brother. And it says, Vayoyme Yisrael, and Israel said, Lama hara yoysem li. Why did you do such a bad thing to me to tell the man that you still have another brother? And they answered, well, you know, he asked us questions. He asked us everything. The Medrash says that he asked us, what wood was the crib that you lay in made of? I mean, that's how invasive his questions were. That by the time he'd finished interrogating us, he knew everything about us. And, you know, like, what wood was the crib that you lay in made of? And He asked us, do we have a father? Do we have brothers? And we told him. We were clear. We didn't know he's going to say, bring your brother down. Vayomer Yehuda el Yisrael Aviv. And Yehuda says to Yisrael, his father, send the boy with me. We'll go and we'll come back. We won't die. We'll feed everybody. And had you already sent him with us, we could have been back already. I guarantee you can ask him from me. If I don't bring him back to you and show him, I will have sinned to you in this world and in the next world. Vayomer aleihem Yisrael aviyam, and Yisrael, their father, said to them, oh, if that's the case, okay, so this is what I want you to do. Take some nuts and honey and incense and stuff, and there's a gift. So what changed? When Reuven said, you know, my sons will die if I don't bring him back, he didn't even respond. It's like, he's not going to forget, it's not happening. Yehuda steps in, and Yaakov's a different person. And not only is he a different person, but for the first time in 22 years, the Torah calls him Yisroel. Vayomer aleihem. Yeah, their father said to them, go and get us some food. And Judah says, starts his speech. And Yisroel responds. Last week we were saying that when Yaakov is Yaakov, then Yosef is the chief. When Jacob is in his small-mindedness, then Joseph is the one who leads the Jewish people. When Yaakov goes out of his small-mindedness and becomes Yisroel, as the Ari says, is an abbreviation of Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sora, Rochel, Rivka, Avraham, and Leah, right? So the three fathers and the four mothers are there in this name Yisrael, right? It's the whole thing. It's like the Yudke Vavke. Yaakov is like Elikim. When Yehuda becomes Yehuda, Yaakov can't be Yaakov. He has to be Yisrael. So for the first time, he becomes Yisrael in 22 years. Why? Because Yehuda opens his mouth. As soon as Yehuda opens his mouth, Yaakov's this changed person. Because he knows who Yehuda is. Yehuda's Mashiach. Yehuda's a salvation. As soon as Yehuda steps into the breach, it's like Yaakov knows the salvation is about to come because he knows who Yehuda is. You know who Yehuda is? Yehuda is the person who not only can break open the darkness and reveal the light. Other people can do that too. Joseph can do that too. Yehuda is the one that he can break open the darkness, that there never was a darkness. Remember when we're learning that Avraham, you know, he gave up hope really. You know, when God promises him a child, it's like, you know, I stopped davening already for another child. Maybe Yishmael is, maybe. Then, when Yitzchak was born, the miracle was that God shows Avraham and Sarah that they never stopped davening, that the hope was always alive in them, and that Yitzchak wasn't just a gift after the fact. That in fact, Avram and Sarah had never stopped davening for Yitzchak, and so he really was their child. You know, we stop davening for something that's dead. If something that's dead comes back to life, all right, you know, it's a miracle from on high. What's it got to do with me? Yehuda's not like that. Vatechi Ruach Yaakov, we find that, you know, Yehuda has the ability to open up the heart to such an extent where we realize that we had never given up hope, that there's always something inside that is full of faith and hope and belief. That is the greatness of Yehuda. Yehuda Ato. The Zohar Kodesh says, Yehuda Ato, what does it mean, Yehuda you, but at the end of his life, when Yaakov is blessing the children, he says, Yehuda, you, your greater than your brothers. Your brothers all bow down to you. Who do you? So we say Baruch Atah, we say to God. And Yehuda is the one who shows us how to stand face to face with God and say Atah to God, you. And the Zohar Kodesh says, Atah, you are the first father, you are the second father. You know, Yehuda, in the Zohar, when something happens, a salvation occurs, but it's not a complete, total, 100% salvation. It's called Ba'irach Yibum, like a levirate marriage. Somebody had a wife, and then he died, and then the brother comes and marries the wife, and then the child is like the son of the dead one, but it's a Yibum. It's a levirate marriage. When Yehuda did Yibum, right, he had two sons, and then they marry Tamar and they both die. And then who does the Yibum? It's Yehuda himself who does the Yibum. And then she gives birth to Peretz and Zerach. So Yehuda is the first time father and then he's the second time father. That's the ability of Yehuda. There's no Derach Yibum. There's no Oirach Yibum. There's this breaking open of the Hester. He smashes everything open to such a way that it was never, as we're going to see next week, there was never any darkness. And it's interesting, the Medrash goes for Yaakov. The Medrash says, Vayoyme Yisrael, and Israel said, Lomar Arisimli, why did you do such a bad thing to me to tell the man that you had another brother? Reb Levi b'shem Reb Chama b'chanina. Me oylam lai oma Yaakov Avinu dova shel batola. Yaakov Avinu never said a stupid thing in his life until this moment. When he said to Yehuda, why did you do such a bad thing to tell this man that you had another brother? So, Kach Omela HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what God says to that. Ani Oisik Lahamlechiz Benoi B'Mitzrayim, I'm busy making his son king of Egypt. V'hu Oimela Mahara Yoisimli, and he's telling me, why did you do such a bad thing? And it brings a verse from Isaiah, Nista Drochai Me'Hashem, my way is hidden from God. Isaiah says that God taunts Jacob, saying, you say, Lama toima Yaakov, this is a verse in Isaiah, why does Jacob say, Vatadaber Yisrael, and Israel speak, saying, Nistro drochai me Hashem, my path is hidden from God, etc. Because at this moment, Yaakov is not on the level of Yehuda. And this is really what's the whole point of the whole Egyptian exile, is that Yehuda has grown beyond Yaakov. That Yaakov can believe, like he sees Yehuda has faith in the salvation, so Yaakov immediately becomes Yisrael and also has faith in the salvation. But whereas Yehuda believes that everything that is happening is Hashgacha Prodis, is individual divine providence, Yaakov still feels somewhere inside that there's something wrong. And God taunts him, saying, you think something's wrong? You think something bad is happening? How could something bad be happening? I'm busy. Your son is like the king of Egypt. What are you talking about? Right? But Yaakov can't get there where Yehuda can get, because Yehuda is the heart. He's the heart of the world. And on some level, Yaakov knows that, because what does he say to Yehuda? All right, if you're going down, okay, I trust you. Here, take some of the Zimra Sa'oret. Takes this wax and some honey from dates and some different spices and herbs and fruits and stuff, which are really the heart of Eretz Yisroel. The dates they are the heart of Eretz Yisroel. And so on some level Yaakov knows, But to have the chutzpah that Yehuda has, which is basically to poo-poo all the bad that's going on. So it's nothing. That's nothing. It's gaulished. You know, that only Yehuda can do, because he's connected in a way. He's connected. He's malchus, right? Leislemi megarmei klum. Malchus has nothing of its own, and so it's always noichach pnei Hashem. Always has its face turned to God and knows that nothing that's happening is bad. And that's why this week is always the Chanukah is always this week. You know, when the Greeks took over the temple and took over, you know, we felt really bad. We felt unclean. But when they set up the idol inside the temple, when they set up a pagan god, then we mamish lost hope. And now we felt atzus, the depression, and avia vaisatuma, that's the ultimate uncleanliness, the depression, the believing that you've lost all your hope. And then we found that one bottle of oil that has the seal of the high priest. What that was a metaphor. We realized we had inside us Yehuda, who realizes there's nothing bad going on, nothing bad ever happens. And that was the great gift that the Chashmonaim gave us, that they make each of us capable of being the king, of being the Yehuda, of being the high priest, of opening up the light so that we realize nothing was ever destroyed and we were never really in trouble. Shkoyach.